This is Jim Inkster. You are listening to Talk Louisiana. Signature support is derived from the office of Mayor President Sharon Weston Broome, East Baton Rouge Parish. And the show originates from Investar Tower in Baton Rouge. Your number is 877-217-5757. Emails to talk at talklouisiana.org. Robin Dow producing, and our leadoff guest is Emily Soule, who's on the ballot this Saturday, running in District 8 for a school board seat that's been vacated. Her opponent is Steve Crump. We heard from him briefly on Monday, and now we have a visit with Emily, a registered Republican, lifelong resident of East Baton Rouge Parish. She is a person who knows this area well and received her education at Chapel Trafton, now the Dunham School, and Sacred Heart before graduating from Baton Rouge Magnet High School in 2000. Went to LSU, graduated in 2004, and continued her studies at Reformed Theological Seminary. And so both of the candidates have a background, in a way, in the ministry. And those who are involved in education usually feel, and justifiably so, that they're called to serve. So, Emily, why are you seeking this post?
Hey, good morning. First, I just want to tell you, I'm so sorry I missed the show on Monday. I was actually at Wildwood Elementary reading to kids as part of the EBR Reads program. So I'm sorry I couldn't be on Monday, but thanks for having time for me today.
That's all right. I'm glad. So why are you running?
Yes. So I am running at like the bio that you just gave. I have lived in Baton Rouge my whole life. I love Baton Rouge. I am part of an amazing church. I am the mother to three sweet girls. I met my husband the first day of 10th grade at Baton Rouge High, and we just love the city. And when we started having kids of our own, we went through that struggle that all families go through of figuring out what is the right school for our kids. And my husband and I both felt called to public school for our kids. And as we started looking in EBR, we even considered moving to another parish to find the right fit. But ultimately, we wanted to stay here. We want to be in Baton Rouge. And that's what's led me to feeling like I need to step up and be a part of what's happening in education. Here, I am really working hard to understand all the challenges in the school district, and I feel inspired to be a part of the solution for what families have, the good parts of the school system and the challenges, the parts that need to be worked on.
You have been portrayed, and I think accurately, tell me otherwise, but as a supporter of charter schools and school choice. Why do you believe this is a good way to approach our education issues?
Yes, my children are in a charter school, and I am under the belief and the opinion that I want A-plus schools in Baton Rouge, no matter how they get here, whether they are run by the district, run by the state, run by charter. I want good schools in EBR. So I'm not really here as an advocate for charter schools. I'm here as an advocate for students and for families, and choice is only one part of that platform. I support great schools, and it doesn't matter to me who runs them. If they serve children well and parents want to choose them, then I want us to have them here, and I want families to be able to choose them.
We're hearing the voice of Emily Soule, who for 14 years was at Grace Life Fellowship, a non-denominational Christian church in our community, serving as youth director and now as its family ministries director. 877-217-5757. We will take a call or two, but please be brief in your remarks to Emily. Tanya on Drusilla. Tanya, you're on. Good morning. You're on Talk Louisiana.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. My question is to Emily, what are your thoughts on the school district's current situation with redistricting? And what would your thoughts be on moving forward as far as redistricting is concerned?
All right.
Hi, Tanya. Thanks for calling. Look, I don't think anyone who's pursuing service on the school board is really that excited about redistricting. If it comes up with the board, my perspective is that it should be fair and data-driven, but it is not the main focus of our tenure. We are faced with some critical problems in schools, and I want to make sure that kids can read, do math, and become successful adults. Redistricting is an adult-focused issue, and I know it's important, Please hear that. I know it is important, but I hate to see it be one of the driving forces for my electoral campaign or anyone.
You're hearing the voice of Emily Soule, District 8, and I would encourage everybody within earshot, if you didn't vote early, to vote Saturday if you're in this district, or if not, it's a statewide election day with party primaries, and this is the presidential primary process. But in District 8, this is the marquee item, Emily Soule against Steve Crump. She's a Republican. He is a independent, formerly a Democrat. Now, a listener asked about your perception about the performance of Cito Narcisse, who's no longer with us as the president of the school system, and what kind of replacement, what are the qualities you're looking for in the successor to Superintendent Narcisse?
Yeah, there is so much going on in the district right now. One of those things being having the privilege of choosing a new superintendent. And I think there's a lot that we need to look at for that. Some of those things being, I want to make sure that the next superintendent aligns with the vision of the board. I think the board having a clear vision moving forward is important. And I want to make sure that the superintendent is aligned with that. I think the lack of support that special needs families have had in the past needs to take priority, which it has with Bessie coming in. And I think the focus of having good teachers in the classroom is really important. I want Baton Rouge to be a place where teachers want to come work in this district. And I think having the right superintendent in place is going to help channel that down, getting money spent in the correct places, and having the right people in the right schools.
Mike in Villa Del Rey asks, where do you stand, Emily, on vaccines for kids?
Yeah. Okay, vaccines. This is actually a decision that is going to be made at the state level, and school board members really have little control over this issue.
Do you have any thoughts one way or the other?
That's about it. It's a decision that happens at the state level.
All right.
Fair enough.
Mary in the Garden District, please be concise. You're on with Emily. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Emily, I am curious to know why you are running for the school board when your own children attend a charter school.
All right. Is there an inconsistency there? And by the way, I remember when Pat Screen was on the school board, the former mayor, who is a liberal Democrat, his kids went to parochial schools as well. But what about your kids going to charter schools and you wanting to be a member of the East Baton Rouge Parish School Board?
Yeah, I'm really glad this question was brought up. Charter schools are a part of the public school system. They are a part of what's happening in our city. And I am a parent with kids in school right now, experiencing public school right now. That is where my kids are at. And so I have a good sense of what other parents are going through that are raising a family right now. And so I want to be a part of the solution. I want parents to have a choice and a good choice. I'm an advocate for families. And charter is just one of those choices. EBR is a great place to have a family, and I want the schools to match that.
All right. Patricia in Magnolia Woods. Patricia?
Good morning. Since you want to have good teachers in the classroom, I'm wondering if you will vote for a tax increase so that we can pay them more.
What about a tax increase to pay teachers better?
Yeah, so I want us to first look at the budget very concisely. I hate that you have to be like a CPA to be able to decipher the finances of the school board. Once we have done this, if it is not clear that there is enough money to pay teachers well, then of course I'm going to support whatever we need to get better pay for teachers. But I think there's quite a few things we can do before we get to a new tax.
All right, Jim and Walker, you're on, Jim.
Good morning. I do have a quick question, and that is, when are we going to get to, less standardized testing?
What about less standardized testing? Do you think that's a good thing, Emily?
I actually have been, can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay. I actually have been looking into standardized testing a little bit and doing some research on it. There are some ways that standardized testing really helps us to see where schools are at and what kids are learning. In fact, it's one of the easiest ways that we can see if kids are on grade level. And so I do think there's a balance, of course, to all things we're learning in the classroom. But I do think that there is a point and a reason to standardized testing.
877-217-5757. We only have a few more minutes with Emily Soule, who's running for the school board, East Baton Rouge Parish. This position was made open by the vacation of the job, as in vacating it. Katie Kennison spent 8 months in office before resigning without an explanation. We're back with Emily for a few more moments, and it's Mark Ballard after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Robin Dow producing a few more minutes with Emily Soule, running for the East Baton Rouge Parish School Board, Baton Rouge and through and through, and a registered Republican. And she is being opposed by longtime minister. He was a pastor at the Unitarian Church for a generation, Steve Crump, running as an independent. Now, a couple of listeners have asked about the distinction between charter schools and public schools, saying that, yes, they are part of the school system, but they're generally governed by their local boards rather than the school board. Is that an accurate summation, and is it relevant in this case, Emily?
Yeah, so great question. So the charter schools in Louisiana and Baton Rouge do have their own boards that are a part of making their decisions, but they also have to be approved and hold accountable to the EBR school board.
Okay. Morgan and Gardier, please be concise. Morgan, you're on with Emily.
Two things. Do you support the neighborhood school model? And also, are you a member or supporter of Moms for Liberty?
Hi. Okay. Let me start with the first question, which was, do I support the neighborhood model? I support good schools for Baton Rouge. So whatever that school looks like, if there is a great school in the neighborhood that is functioning and serving the kids well, then yes, I support that. As far as Moms for Liberty, I have actually not had the opportunity to meet with them. I have heard about them and heard about things that they're doing for the community, but I have not had a chance to meet with them.
Stuart downtown. Stuart, please be brief. You're on with Emily.
Hey, thank you, as always, Jim, your audience, and Mrs. Soule, good morning. Mrs. Soule, ma'am, schools are basically all the same as far as people are saying schools are bad. Schools are not bad. The clientele that attend the schools who don't do their homework and abide by, quote, school rules is what makes a school bad, not, for the most part, teacher performance and what have you.
All right, what's your question?
Ma'am, do you think that the system should stop wasting $35 million a year busing children across town?
What about busing kids through the city? As Stuart says, it's a $35 million endeavor. Your thoughts, Emily?
Yeah, transportation is definitely an issue that's come up a lot during this campaign, and I do think it's something that we need to do better with. He did also bring up a point about kids in schools, and look, I don't think kids are the problem in schools. And in fact, I think one way that my opponent and I are at a disagreement, I actually heard him say this on the show when I got to listen back to it on Monday, was my opponent was talking about how kids in poor areas in the district, it's the poor areas that need to be fixed. And what I would say to that is I refuse to buy into the fact that if you're poor, it means you can't have a good education. All of our kids deserve better than that. And we need to do whatever it takes to help get good teachers in the classroom, to get good faculty and staff, some of which we already have. There are schools in our city that are serving poor children. I can actually think of four off the top of my head. They're all B-rated, and between 85 and 95% of the kids in that school are economically disadvantaged, and they are doing a great job serving our kids. That's Brownsville Elementary School, Progress Elementary School, Mentorship Academy Charter School, and Madison Prep Charter School.
Okay. Now, Steve Crump, Reverend Crump, he took issue with you receiving some out-of-state donations from people who have an interest in education across the country. What are your thoughts about whether you would be beholden to them?
Oh, I am so glad you brought this up, because this is something that I need to clear up. My campaign, I have raised about $22,000, and I have had two PAC donations, both of which are local. One is from Future PAC, which is affiliated with the Chamber of Commerce. I received $2,500 from them. And then Franklin Foyles PAC, I received $300 from them. Those are the only two PACs that have contributed to my campaign. I did receive endorsements from another campaign, which was Red Stick Leaders for Students. Future PAC and Red Stick Leaders for Students both endorsed my campaign. I would like to note they also interviewed Steve for both of these. And so my understanding of this is that my opponent and I both met with these PACs and they chose to support me. And so I think that's really more what his issue is.
These out-of-state actors, though, they can work independently. So if there is some activity out of state, you're saying they're doing it independent of your campaign. Am I saying that right?
Oh, yeah. Yes, sir. I have seen a few things that look great with my picture on them that I had nothing to do with. I didn't know they were doing them. I didn't see them until after they went out.
All right. Well, Emily, we wish you well on the campaign trail or in the home stretch. I suspect, like Reverend Crump, you're going to many doors in your district. It's a sprawling district. You're out on the streets. Is that correct?
Yes, I am. It's been so great to meet so many neighbors. I've lived here my whole life, and I'm still meeting new people. And District 8 is just amazing, and it's full of people that love and care for the city, and I'm so thankful to be a part of it.
Well, thank you for joining us today, and we hope people will get out and vote one way or the other, because your voice is important and it's heard no more profoundly than at the ballot box. Thank you, Emily Soule.
Thank you.
We're joined now by Mark Ballard at the Beltway and covering politics for The Advocate and Picayune. And if you read his column, which I make a habit of doing every Sunday, his last column was about a guy who's been on this show a few times, more than a few, Roman Rybchenko, the Ukrainian basketball stalwart who played 4 years at LSU. And Roman Rybchenko went to Washington in hopes of coaxing Mike Johnson into voting for aid to Ukraine. And as Speaker of the House, his vote is more than a vote. It's actually determinative as to whether it gets to a vote. So, Mark, where does this stand, and your thoughts about the eloquence of Mr. Rybchenko?
Well, I think where it stands right now is that that Mike Johnson is kind of floating an idea for the Ukraine funding that will bring on board some of the very conservative Republicans who are against continued funding for the Ukraine. And he's talking about a kind of a loan program, but we haven't really seen the details of that. He's been focusing mostly on trying to keep government open this week.
Yep, and it looks like that's going to happen, but every move that Mr. Johnson makes, Speaker Johnson, the pride of Benton, Louisiana, is a move on a tightrope, isn't it?
Yeah, it is, because he can't get anything. He's only got one vote to work with. I mean, the Republicans hold the majority in the U.S. House by one single seat. And he also has a number of conservatives that don't want to go along with what he and the leadership want to do. So he's constantly having to go across the aisle and pull in Democrats. But at the same time, whenever he does that, then he kind of exposes himself to attacks from the conservative wing. And as we saw with Kevin McCarthy back in October, that they can pull him out of that seat.
Well, it's it's always been a case in which the speaker has to deal with more people than does a backbencher. And Mike Johnson now knows the roles of both. He was one of those people who in the past might have been criticizing actions that he, as Speaker Mike Johnson, actions that he's making now.
Wait, I didn't quite follow.
I'm just saying that his moves as Speaker are in variance to what he proclaimed as a representative, one of 435.
Right. I think that Mike Johnson is a practical, he's a practical House Speaker. He's got to deal with, as a leader, to put his own opinions aside and try to get something done. I mean, that's kind of the way that I read it, and that's what he's doing here.
877-217-5757. We'll talk about many matters with Mark Ballard when we return after this. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. Mark Ballard is with us, and we have a few stories that, more than a few actually, but one in particular that has both local and national implications. Jeff Landry, the governor of Louisiana, has dispatched Louisiana National Guard troops to the border with Mexico as Governor Greg Abbott of Texas tries mightily to what he believes will thwart illegal people from coming into the United States, undocumented people. Well, yesterday, a panel of three judges, appeals court judges in New Orleans, Fifth Circuit, heard arguments in a bitter legal fight between Governor Abbott of Texas and the Biden administration over the Lone Star State's new migrant arrest law, punctuating a series of legal developments over the last 24 hours that have left migrants and many law enforcement officials in Texas uncertain about what is next. And this border dispute is a mess. As we know, the Republicans in the House and Senate had come to an agreement on a bill that was backed by Joe Biden. And then when Donald Trump leaned on Mike Johnson, things went awry and the bill was no longer favorable to the Republicans in the U.S. House of Representatives, at least enough of them. So Mark Ballard, we have this as a campaign issue, and I think that's basically what's going on here. This is not a new issue, but it's a viable campaign issue, and both sides are posturing, trying to make hay in the sunshine. This one, through the years, I think has helped Republicans more than Democrats, but where does it stand now, and where do you see this going over the next few months?
Well, yeah, it is a political campaign issue, and it does favor the Republicans over the Democrats, in large part because the Republican stance is so, you know, easy, cut and dried, you know, block them, don't let them in. The appropriations bills that we hope get passed, at least I do, because it will save me from having to work over the weekend, that we hope gets passed by the end of the week, we include some part to, it'll include some issues that will deal with the border. It'll include more money and include some of the restrictions that the Republicans want. It's not what the bipartisan bill recommended, but it is something, you know. So I see that that this is going to remain an issue because, you know, for Congress and for the elections in Congress and for the president, because it is a vital issue for many voters.
877-217-5757 is your number. And this is an election year, and we're now 7.5 months from the finish line of November 5th. And turnout will no doubt be high on Election Day, but Joe Biden in particular needs to energize his base. And for whatever reason, the base of Donald Trump appears to be consistently energized, and that's about 40% of the American people. And then if he gets a little more than that, and he doesn't need 50%, the most he's ever received in a presidential election is 46%, he's the leader of the free world. And this, mind you, also is a candidate who's never received a plurality of the vote. He was defeated twice in the overall vote. So Biden is even acknowledging that it looks like a photo finish. This is going to be a close race unless something unusual happens, Mark.
Well, yeah, because it's really just going to come down to a handful of states. And those states that Biden won by, 10,000 votes or less, and is could easily swing towards Donald Trump and allow Donald Trump to win in the Electoral College. There are a couple of things that I think we should notice is that in these primary elections that Donald Trump is, even when there's only Republicans voting, he's still getting like 20-30% votes against him, for someone else, which says that there is a significant number of Republicans that want to move on from Donald Trump. This may end up costing him problems in the future, as well as the fact that he's pretty much out of money. He's been spending most of his campaign dollars on legal fees. And so he's way behind what the Democrats are. And so those are two issues going against the former president, and that's kind of basically balanced out by his doing well in those battleground states.
Well, the former president's lawyers told a New York appellate court Monday that it's impossible for him to post a bond covering $454 million in civil fraud judgments while he appeals, suggesting the former president's legal losses have put him in a serious cash crunch. And then there is the trial, now pushed back a month, but still on target for April now, involving Stormy Daniels. And we should have more on that as we move along this morning. But if he were to be convicted, a listener asked, could he still be elected? And the answer is yes. And he would presumably be appealing his conviction. And if that's the case, then he could be elected and he could even serve from a jail cell. And all of those are hypothetical situations. But Biden, let's face it, is not real popular. And Trump is not either. But Trump may have a more committed base. And it really comes down to who votes on November 5th. Mark, Trump has defied all the odds, scandals one by one, any one of which would have undone candidates in previous times, but he is resilient if nothing else.
Well, that is true. I mean, it's certainly almost any of these things that, or many of them that have popped up would have just, deep sixed another candidate. That's and so he seems to have at least energized, or I guess by speaking what his base wants to hear, that he's basically energized them to follow him, and he's remade the Republican Party in his own image.
877-217-5757 is your number, and let's be brief with Mark Patrick in Innisfail Estates. Patrick, you're on with Mark Ballard.
Hi, Patrick. Hey, Mark. So the border bill, I don't know if you really could call it the border bill because it did nothing to help the border, but the border bill that the Democrats pushed, wouldn't it have funded sanctuary cities and have made it very difficult for the next president-elected to enforce the border?
All right. What about that? The bill, by the way, that was pretty much written by Oklahoma Republican conservative James Lankford, Senator. But anyway, Mark, go for it.
Well, I disagree with you on that because it certainly addressed certain issues that that needed to be addressed that President Trump, when he was president, tried to do but was overruled by the courts. It also added more judges to handle the asylum claims, which are now running, 8 years to take care of. And it would have moved them down to about 6 months and made that go a lot quicker. It added money so that it could expand the detention centers. Right now, they're kind of like a refugee camp because there's just so many of those people being put into it. So, I mean, I disagree. I think that what you're saying is like Republican talking points. And I think that it would have done a lot because it seemed to have been an awful lot of what was asked for. The other thing that they keep throwing out is that the stay in Mexico policy, and the problem with that is that you have to deal with, you know, the Mexican government, who says these are not our people, this is not our problem, you know. So mm-hmm. And you do have, I mean, we can argue about that all day long, but the Mexican government says, no, we're not going to just let you throw them back to us because, you know, they're not our problem. They're not Mexicans.
David in Atlanta. David, you're on. Good morning.
Good morning. Mr. Ballot, the right-wing propaganda pro-Trump cable TV news channels are excusing Trump's remarks, saying it'll be a bloodbath. Now, he never mentioned it'll be a bloodbath in the auto industry. And furthermore, Trump has said death and destruction regarding his upcoming indictment in New York. He's also praised the hooligans who caused death and injury in the Capitol on January 6th as hostages and, I believe, even patriots. So why is it so difficult for people to believe, and why are so many excuses being made for Trump's remark saying there'd be a bloodbath?
All right.
I think that it's overblown. I mean, because Trump has a tendency to exaggeration, and I think that what happens is that he'll exaggerate something, and then it becomes a cause celeb on among many on the left side, who are basically saying, you know, oh, this is terrible because he's, you know, said this. Whereas I have a feeling that a lot of what he says just shoot from the hip type of thing.
Dan downtown. Dan, you're on. Good morning. Hi, Dan.
Hi.
You're on.
Yes. My question, you mentioned Senator Langford. Will he be primaried for having the effrontery to even speak with Democrats about trying to solve American problems?
There is talk about that, but I mean, so far we don't know, and I'm unsure exactly when he's back up for election. Maybe they'll forget by then. But there has been a lot of talk about that, which is, I mean, basically, the Republicans said, "Okay, you do it," and set him off to do it, and he did his best. And then because they wanted to keep it as a campaign issue, they kind of threw him under the bus.
And Langford represents a state that, in the last two cycles, every county in Oklahoma has gone for Donald Trump. And he is a supporter of Donald Trump and a hard-boiled conservative, and this bill was not liked by many Democrats. Biden reluctantly signed on to it, and then when President Trump got wind of it, he stopped it. We'll talk more in a moment. This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to Talk Louisiana on Deck. In just a moment, we will hear from Jada Yuan, a writer for the Washington Post Style section. She focuses on culture and entertainment, and she has a review of the Stormy Daniels documentary and some thoughts about Stormy Daniels, the pride of Baton Rouge, her role in this campaign for President of the United States of America. Before we get to Jada, one last caller, and I'm sorry we won't be able to get to all of you today, but Mark will be back next week, I feel certain. James in Metairie. James, you're on with Mark.
Good morning to gentlemen. I'm looking at an article just published today. Yesterday, a caucus representing most House Republicans endorsed a national abortion ban. 15-week national abortion ban. Republicans, radical Christian conservatives, you want a culture war? You're going to have one. Try convincing the American people that human embryos are children.
All right. Well, that'll be a big issue, maybe the biggest, the Dobbs decision. I mentioned how the border dispute, I think, has worked politically for Republicans. Well, abortion rights is a theme. And it's more than a theme, of course. It was a way of life for almost 50 years. But it's favoring Democrats in most places, maybe not in the Deep South, but in other places, yes, Mark. What are your thoughts about whether this will be palatable and viable on the campaign trail?
Well, one thing to remember is that in Louisiana, that what they are saying fits in with what the majority of the voters in Louisiana say. They are anti-abortion for the most part.
Now, nationally, I think that we have seen this already in that the ideas of 15 weeks bans and things is unpalatable to a good number of voters, whether they're Republican or Democrat, as we've seen in a number of states and as we saw in the 2022 midterm elections.
Mark, thank you. It's always a pleasure. Keep going.
Thank you. Okay. Have a good one.
You too. Have a good week. Jada Yuan is with us. She writes for the Washington Post. She's crisscrossed the country following national political campaigns, as well as covered two First Ladies of the U.S. She's proud of the work she did on the ground in New York, chronicling the early months of the pandemic as life shut down America's biggest city. And last year, she published her first book, Unleashing Oppenheimer, inside Christopher Nolan's Atomic Age thriller. She most recently was in Austin, Texas, and she ran into one Stephanie Clifford, better known as Stormy Daniels, from Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Stormy celebrated her 45th birthday 4 days ago, and her affair in 2018 consumed Donald Trump's presidency, writes Jada, after his attorney, Michael Cohen, violated the law by paying $130,000 to the adult film star to keep silent. And it may feel like old news, but it's far from over. What was abundantly clear in the South by Southwest premiere of the new documentary Stormy is that Daniels, who arrived as a surprise guest, is still viable, accompanied by two large security guards who surveyed the room at all times. The guards had bomb-sniffing dogs with them and off-duty police officers. Because Stormy, as you can imagine, has received threats. Ever since 6 years ago, she spoke out about an alleged one-night stand with the former president, and she then fought back against him in a defamation trial. And there is a criminal trial coming up next month, if things go according to plan. Jada, good morning to you.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. It was cool hearing someone from Metairie. I love Louisiana.
Well, I know you're a person of the world. I mean, all over the world you've traveled, and you like Louisiana, and we love you for liking us. So what about speaking of Louisiana, this girl, some might say, made good from Louisiana, Stormy Daniels. She is still the talk of many towns, and that may intensify in April. You saw the documentary. Is it a good presentation?
Yeah, I think it is. I think it it really gives you a sense of Stormy herself. She introduces herself as being from Baton Rouge and growing up loving horses, and she became a Reiki healer of horses in the interim between the defamation trial and this new indictment of Trump. So she's that's actually her true passion is healing horses. But you get to hear her side of the story, and I think it's you read the headlines, maybe you feel like you've heard her side of the story, but I don't think that any of us really have heard it from her. And yeah, she comes across pretty well. Perhaps as an unreliable narrator, it seems like she's telling the truth.
She is a performance artist, as is Donald Trump. And if you're trying to determine usually who's telling the truth and you've got a former president against an adult film star, the advantage would be to the former president. But in this case, they both have questions about their veracity, but you're saying that you, based on what you know, you believe that she is credible. Why?
I don't know that I believe it. She just comes across as sounding credible. I think there are parts of her story that go into her background of being abused as a child, and that makes sense for why she entered into the porn world, and also that there's a sort of revealing part where she talks about the alleged one night stand with Donald Trump and why she didn't react differently. That she traces back to her childhood. I just found it fascinating that I just found most of it fascinating that her life really did seem to be turned upside down. And that's mostly what the documentary is about. It's not about sort of parsing out whether or not this is true, but whatever happened and the way that the president went after her really upended her life, and it tore apart her marriage, and it for a while it made it hard for her to see her daughter, who is now 13. She did this stripping tour, this tour of strip clubs around the United States, and you do kind of see how that was a business move as well.
Well, her attorney, Michael Avenatti, didn't do her any favors. That is for sure. But for this sure. is a remarkable story, in that Donald Trump is under indictment in four different places, and some would say of any alleged sins, this would be the least, because obviously other politicians have had similar instances, but it's cost the careers of other politicians. You never heard from John Edwards again after the revelations about him. In his case was the one I think most similar to this one. It was a hung jury. But this case will be in New York City, and Donald Trump has not fared well in his hometown when he's gone into courtrooms of late. And Stormy, she's captivating. I would think that the nation will be, as the Simon Garfunkel song says, it will be yearning its lonely eyes for her. They will be all intent on what Stormy has to say, and so it could. I think it's an understatement, but Jada, it looks like it could be a major spectacle.
Oh yeah, well I covered some of when Trump was being was appearing in New York court before. Was it last year? It was a spectacle. It was just media vans parked outside constantly. And strangely, the film Joker 2 actually filmed at a courtroom next door over the weekend during one day of the trial.
Phil in Jefferson Terrace. Phil, please be brief. You're on with Jada. Hi, Phil.
Yeah. Hi, good morning. And it's just, I just don't see how all these January 6th actors who are not being indicted and who actually, like our governor, who was part of...
All right, that's a different matter than Stormy Daniels. She's been involved in a lot of things, but not January 6th. But she made her case on 60 Minutes with Anderson Cooper, and another listener asked why that didn't have more staying power. Gary Hart, he was run out of a race 35 years ago because he was caught with Donna Rice, who was a Phi Beta Kappa, and Stormy Daniels, a porn star, and Hush Money, and all this doesn't seem to have affected Trump with his base, Jada.
Yeah, but not much does seem to affect him with his base. He has a kind of charisma, and I know friends who are on the campaign trail who say that it's even bigger than they remember from back in 2016. Mm-hmm. If you love Donald Trump, I don't think that having sex with a porn star, or allegedly having sex with a porn star while you're a married man, really, really changes much in the equation.
You said Stormy was shaking with tears through the Q&A.
Yes. Yes, she was very emotional.
Really?
I spoke with the filmmakers, and it had been, this is the first time that she's put her story out, more than a 60 minute special, which is kind of a, also an artificial environment.
We do have to roll, but you're delightful. Hopefully we'll talk again soon. The documentary is Stormy. We're back tomorrow. Stay safe and stay tuned.